This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. At his last news conference as president earlier today, George W. Bush issued no apologies for the controversial tactics he authorized in the war on terror. Some believe that apologies would fall far too short. Critics charge that torture and warrantless wiretaps are violations of law and that the Obama administration must investigate and prosecute those responsible. Others caution that such judgments are best left to history, that we should resist the urge to criminalize our former leaders because they were defending our country and people against a ruthless attacker. Later in the hour, mandatory calorie counts on restaurant menus on the opinion page this week. But first, the pros and cons of prosecuting the previous administration. Asked about that yesterday on ABC TV, President-elect Obama said no one is above the law, but he added that he does not want intelligence professionals who defend the country to be looking over their shoulders. Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Yesterday's New York Times presented different points of view on the op-ed page. We're going to hear two. We begin with Charles Fried, a professor at Harvard Law School, who joins us from a studio at Columbia University, where he's a visiting professor. Professor, nice to have you on the program today.
It's very nice to be here.
And you argue that those responsible, you're not defending what they did, but saying it would be a bad idea to prosecute. Why?
Because it would be a media circus of which the public would soon tire. It would accomplish nothing. It would accomplish nothing. And even for those who view it as either a kind of vindication or as a kind of bloodlust revenge, would not be satisfied because it's from clear any prosecutable were committed.
Professor Fried, we're having some technical difficulties with your line, for which we apologize, but we're going to pull you out of the conversation just momentarily while we attempt to repair that, so please bear with us. And let me turn now to Jonathan Turley, who's with us here in Studio 3A, more reliable than the line to New York. He's a professor of public interest and law at George Washington University. Nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much, Neil.
And you disagree with Professor Fried and others argue that, indeed, no matter what the problems with this, prosecutions should go ahead.
Yes, and I think to Professor Fried's credit, he did say in the New York Times that he thought that what the Bush administration did was reprehensible, and he doesn't pull away from the idea that it's torture. But it's not a bloodlust to enforce federal law and international law. This is a very simple question for me. Waterboarding is a well-defined act of torture, and torture is a well-defined war crime. And the question is whether we will investigate a war crime. Much is accomplished by simply holding people to the rule of law. You know, when you say no one's above the law, that necessitates that the law is applied. And so what we have is we're seeing a lot of efforts now to say, look to the future and not the past. But if there's war crimes in the past, a civilized nation can't ignore that.
Who do you prosecute? Those who authorized it? Those who did it?
Well, first of all, unlike many, I have no sympathy for those who did it. I mean, I recognize what President-elect Obama said, that intelligence officials shouldn't be looking over their shoulders. But when it comes to torture, I think they should be looking over their shoulders. I think that when someone tells you to torture someone, the answer should be no. But no one really seriously believes that we're going to prosecute the people who actually tortured individuals. The question is,
why not?
Well, some people argue that because these people were told by the Justice Department that it was lawful, that they have a defense. But that doesn't work very well for the people who ordered it. And obviously that involves...
Isn't that defense, I was just following orders?
It is, in fact, very close to that. But the real question for this nation is the people who ordered it. I mean, we have now Vice President Cheney going on television talking about how he ordered a war crime. It's a very open act. And if this country doesn't investigate and prosecute, what does that say about us? Other countries, emerging countries, third world countries, have investigated and prosecuted their leaders for war crimes. But for some reason, we believe war crimes is something for other nations.
Let's get Charles Fried back in the conversation. I think we've solved our technical problem. We apologize, sir.
Well, first of all, the designation war crimes does cover an enormous range of things. And what, at worst, Vice President Cheney authorized that might be called a war crime has to do with probably a very small number of interrogational techniques used on detainees. There are many people who think that the war in Afghanistan or the war in Iraq were war crimes, but I don't think Professor Turley is saying that. So what he's talking about are probably very small numbers of instances. The other countries that prosecute their war crimes, well, what are we thinking of? Are we thinking of Liberia? Are we thinking of Rwanda? If you can't tell the difference between the genocide in Rwanda and the waterboarding of about four people during the War on Terror, I think you're living on such a different planet from me that I wonder if there's any point in our talking.
Four people that we know about. Jonathan Turley.
Well, I take a very severe view of this. I don't think there are a small or great number of war crimes. There are war crimes. It's against the law. And this was a war crime done with great premeditation. It was done at the time when it was a well-defined crime. We prosecuted Yokio Asano in 1947 for the war crime of waterboarding. England put to death people who did what we did. And so what's at stake here is not just holding people like President Bush and others accountable. What's at stake here is the thing that defines us, that separates us, the very thing that we're fighting about. I don't think this is an inconvenience, and I don't think it's an embarrassment. The Constitution doesn't guarantee that presidents won't commit crimes or war crimes. But we have three international documents clearly defining torture as a war crime. But more importantly, if for some people, it's not just international law. It's four federal laws define this as a violation of law.
Let's get some callers in.
That may be true. What you said about the definitions of laws is not maybe, but certainly true. But you have those prosecutions. They will probably fail. They will probably fail because those who acted under them will point to opinions from OLC.
The Office of Legal Counsel at the Justice
Department. Badly flawed opinions, absurd opinions, but nonetheless opinions from the relevant government agency saying that waterboarding is not torture. I think that's wrong, but it makes the practice unprosecutable. And all you'd have is a lengthy and, in the end, inconclusive unsatisfactory procedure.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. Our guests are Charles Fried, who you just heard, a professor at Harvard Law School, now visiting at Columbia Law School, and Jonathan Turley, professor of public interest law at George Washington University. We'll begin with Patrick. Patrick with us from Scottsdale, Arizona.
Hi, Neil. I just really wanted to point out that I think if the pros of prosecuting for war crimes outweighed the cons, then Reid and Pelosi in the last 2 years, who were posturing themselves for the 08 election and who are quite a deal more partisan than Obama appears to be, would have been all over this. But if I lose my job or if I can't get insurance or if the economy's in the tank and I don't have a retirement plan, and we're talking about warrantless wiretapping, that's how Americans get really angry, and that's how presidents end up serving one term, is by not solving problems, but by looking backwards. And, you know, I believe that Obama can make statements and move policy forward without trying to prosecute something that, I agree with Charles, probably wouldn't ever result in any convictions anyway.
So, Jonathan Turley, as a practical matter, this is something President-elect Obama, and in a week's time, President Obama has better things to do with his time.
Well, you know, practicalities are always the enemies of principle, and it's not convenient. It might not even be practical. It just happens to be the law. And the problem that we have is that we do have people who need help, and we can help them. What we're talking about is for President-elect Obama and for the Congress, get out of the way and allow the law to be enforced. And if it's not successful, I'm still satisfied that people were called to account. But I think that part of the problem here is that we have a very program-centric politics instead of a principle-centric politics. But, the criminal defendants that I've represented would love to be able to stand in front of a judge and say, look, judge, stop looking backwards. Let's look forward. Forget about the crime I did. We both have important things we need to address. People would laugh us out of the courtroom. And yet when the subject is war crimes, it seems like an idiosyncrasy.
Charles Fried, is there a distinction between the burglar and the public official?
There was a little glide there in Turley's logic. He says it's not practical, it's the law. Well, there is no law that says that everything that is or might be a crime must be prosecuted. Any reasonable defense attorney and any reasonable prosecutor knows that prosecution is an act of government. It is an act of judgment. No prosecutor prosecutes every crime that might possibly have been committed. Even special prosecutors and independent counsels will sometimes not indict for things that technically are crimes, because it is not wise to do so. It is one of the several shames of the Starr independent counselship that Ken Starr took more or less Jonathan Turley's point of view. And the result was a humiliation, a farce, and a disaster.
We're talking about Patrick, by the way, thanks very much for the phone call. We're talking with Charles Fried and Jonathan Turley about the question and the surrounding issues about the idea, should the incoming Obama administration investigate alleged war crimes conducted by the Bush administration? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing whether or not to prosecute members of the Bush administration for controversial tactics in the war on terror. President Bush leaves office in 8 days. Some argue he and his team must be held to account. Others argue this would set a dangerous precedent and say let history render its verdict. We're listening to arguments on both sides today. The pros and cons of prosecuting the previous administration, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Charles Fried, Harvard Law professor, currently at Columbia Law School, is opposed to prosecuting members of the Bush administration. His op-ed, History's Verdict, ran in the New York Times yesterday. On the other side, Jonathan Turley, professor of public interest law at George Washington University, who believes the Bush administration should be held accountable in court. Mark emailed us on his BlackBerry. No political realist can imagine an Obama administration would prosecute here. He has an ambitious agenda that he can kiss goodbye without some Republican help which would evaporate if he tried to prosecute Bush or Cheney. Get real, Jonathan Turley. I added those last two words, but go ahead.
Well, you know, unfortunately, this is the standard of most of our politics. It's always an inconvenient time for principle. That's what has really marked this Congress, which has refused to investigate crimes for years. And at first they said, we won't investigate on the Democratic side because we don't have a majority. And then when they got a majority, they said, there's just not enough time. And then you should wait for the new administration. And now that we have a new administration, they're saying, let's not look to the past.
Hey, can I ask, what exactly is the principle? If the principle is that you don't torture, I'm with you. If the principle is that everybody who might be prosecuted for a crime must be prosecuted, I think you lose almost everybody.
No, I'm not saying that everyone who ever commits a crime necessarily should be prosecuted. But when you talk about prosecutorial discretion, I would hope that when a president commits a crime, that should have a presumption that it will be enforced. He takes an oath to uphold the Constitution. There's nothing more dangerous in office than a president takes upon himself.
You sound just like Ken Starr.
Well, you know what?
I'm not ashamed. Just like Ken Starr.
But you know, Professor, I'm not ashamed to say that I testified during the Clinton impeachment hearing that impeachment should go forward, even though I supported Bill Clinton because he committed a crime. And it's true. I take a rather literal view of presidents committing crimes. I think it's a very, very dangerous thing. But I have to say, Professor Fried, I read your op-ed. And to me, it read basically like gentlemen don't investigate gentlemen for war crimes, a sort of Herbert Hoover. And I just don't understand why this is some nicety or idiosyncratic issue.
In defense of President Hoover, he was talking about other people's mail and not war crimes.
It's true. I did corrupt the quote.
Okay. Let's see if we can get another.
And we're not talking about Herbert Hoover. We're talking about the FBI director Hoover, I take it, right?
No, he's talking about President Hoover said
who was Secretary of State at the time.
Yeah. Gentlemen don't read other gentlemen's mail. He's talking about espionage to intercept foreign communications. Anyway, let's see if we get Michelle on the line. Michelle's with us from Chicago.
Hello, gentlemen. Pardon my voice, but I really felt the need to call. I agree with President-elect Obama that we should look to the future, but I come to a totally different conclusion, and that is that we need to look to the future and what sort of an example this would be to future presidents with fuzzy moral compasses if we don't investigate and hold those accountable in the Bush-Cheney administration who have perpetrated many crimes. I believe that the Bush-Cheney administration learned from the Nixon administration. They learned that you destroy all evidence, ignore subpoenas, stonewall, prosecute underlings as bad apples, don't prosecute those at the top. They even have enacted their own pardons. They deceived and manipulated the population into the war. And my concern is that if we do not prosecute those at the top, that lessons will be learned by future presidents and other countries, and that the pendulum next time when it swings to the right will swing further and further toward fascism. And as far as Professor Fried's argument, I would suggest that not prosecuting Bush and Cheney and those at the top is very similar to not prosecuting Madoff, but prosecuting your street corner criminal who snatches a lady's purse. You must hold these people accountable, and if you don't, these crimes and others like them will be pushed, even the envelope will be pushed further in the future.
It's very striking
that if what you have is this incredibly legalistic notion of how you conduct politics, which would be a disaster, and no sane person really means it. If you have that, we would have prosecuted Franklin Roosevelt, we would have prosecuted Abraham Lincoln, and of course we did no such thing.
Michelle, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Could you imagine that upon its departure, having prosecuted, successfully or not, say, Vice President Cheney, that any incoming Republican administration would not investigate the previous Democratic administration for jaywalking, if necessary?
I think just looking at the past example of what we held President Clinton to account for and what we have held this administration to account for, I think it is absolutely absurd to think that they should just be allowed to walk free.
I think there is a disconnect there. I couldn't agree more, but I think it argues the opposite direction. The whole Whitewater investigation culminating in the Monica Lewinsky perjury was the most absurd episode in American politics. This is only the second time that a president has been impeached, and for what? I wouldn't over the radio say for what.
Professor Fried, I'll say for what happens.
Lying under oath and in a deposition. I don't see
why.
Well,
there you go, Jonathan. Well, you've just proved my point. And therefore, the impeachment was proper. I think there are probably 2% of the population listening to this program who agrees with that.
Well, you know, Charles, it's a matter of judgment,
and Starr had no judgment, and I fear that those who are urging what you're saying also have no judgment.
A quick response. Let's get some more calls.
There may be only two people in this country to agree with me. But the fact is, what you're doing is placing this country on a terrible slippery slope where we have a clearly defined crime. It happens to be a war crime that we're expected to ignore because it's inconvenient or because we're afraid of what people might do in the future. I mean, a rule of law demands, among other things, that the person who takes the oath to enforce the law must himself comply with it. And I would say that the future is quite dark if we walk away from a clearly defined war crime and simply say, really, Americans don't commit war crimes.
Michelle, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Now let's go now to, this is Chris. Chris with us from Oklahoma City.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, you're on, Chris. Go ahead, please.
I have two real quick points. I'll take my answers off the air. My first point is, if we do prosecute President Bush, and I don't support what he did, but if we do prosecute him, this is going to set a precedent for the next president, Barack Obama, to look over his shoulder every time he does something because of fear of prosecution down the road. And I'm not certain that in 4 years we won't be saying, well, he didn't do enough, and his comeback to that will be, well, I was afraid of getting prosecuted. And my second point is, at the end of Bill Clinton's impeachment, we spent, I don't know, I heard $40 million to get what? Him impeached or get Monica Lewinsky to admit that she had an affair with him. And I'm not really certain that's what we're looking for here.
All right, Chris. Thanks very much for the call. Jonathan Turley, a president of the United States, looking at a terribly dangerous situation, may authorize something, an operation by the Central Intelligence Agency. People who work at the CIA may be asked to do things that may be in a gray area. If they're afraid of prosecution, wouldn't morale suffer? And if there's another attack, what are you going to say? You didn't connect the dots? What are you doing? You didn't do your jobs?
Since when shouldn't we have officials of the government be afraid of prosecution? You're supposed to be afraid of committing crimes. You don't want to be investigated? Don't commit crimes. And this is not some gray area. This is a well-defined crime. They knew it was a crime. And when you look at these memos and you look at the communications from the CIA, they were acting like every criminal defendant I ever represented. They were trying to protect themselves because they expected that there might be an investigation.
Well,
but
this
is not
have,
just. But this is not just some small matter or a small number of war crimes.
They did not have opinions from the Office of Legal Counsel, flawed, absurd opinions, but official opinions saying that what they were doing was not a crime.
That's what
your clients don't have.
Charles, I would agree with you the OLC memos would certainly be a strong defense for the people who follow them. Wouldn't be a complete defense, but I would submit that there is no case where it would be a defense for the people who ordered it. And I think we're talking about the highest ranking people, including President Bush and Vice President Cheney here.
I'm sorry, what is the it? Are you saying conduct within or outside of those OLC memos or the memos themselves?
No, I'm talking about the estoppel defense that I think you're describing.
Estoppel defense?
Well, the argument is that you can go into court and say, I didn't commit a crime because I was told by legal authorities that it wasn't a crime. But that only goes so far. It may help the people down on the feeding chain. But when it comes to the people who ordered the crime.
And there's people who actually did execute the
crime. That's right. But when it, God help us, if we ever get to the point that you can simply find someone like John Yoo, who's able to put into paper this enabling memo, which I agree with Professor Fried is just facially absurd, and to say, well, that ends the matter. It can't be a crime because we said it wasn't. It might matter in terms of this estoppel defense for the people who are the low-lying fruit, but I don't think it's going to protect people like President Bush. And by the way, when we see how difficult
Donald
this trial
would
be.
Donald Rumsfeld?
Well, do you know what I think would be interesting, Professor Fried,
trial? Or Donald Rumsfeld?
Well,
do you think an OLC memo protects Donald Rumsfeld, yes or no?
I think it'd be very questionable to make that defense for Donald Rumsfeld. But I'd also point out that in any trial,
why not Donald Rumsfeld but Lindy England?
Because the status of the memos in question as to John Hughes penciling that memo in, it was in fact later renounced. There were people at the time who were saying that it was absurd. And part of this estoppel defense is whether you could reasonably rely upon it. And I would have serious question whether Rumsfeld could reasonably rely upon that memo. But I'll point out at any trial, What would the court do? The court would be asked to tell, to give a legal instruction to the jury that waterboarding is a well-defined act of torture. And then the question for the trial would be, did this person order waterboarding? I would take that trial as a prosecutor.
And what would be the penalty for such a crime?
Well, I'm not too sure what penalty would actually be meted out. I expect it would be pretty light. But the fact
for
that
a war crime?
Well, I expect that at the end of the day, whoever's the sitting president would probably come to the aid of the convicted president. But the important thing, however, is the conviction, is to say that when you're the most powerful person on earth, it's even more important that you comply with the law.
We're talking about the question of whether the Bush administration should be prosecuted for alleged war crimes by the Obama administration. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let me reintroduce our guests. They are Charles Fried, a professor at Harvard Law School, currently visiting Columbia Law School, and Jonathan Turley, professor of public interest law at George Washington University. At a news conference earlier today, not only did President Bush decline to apologize for things he said were important to defend the country against another attack, but he was also asked the question of would he issue preemptive presidential pardons to those who might or might not be involved in such investigations. And I was wondering if we could get your opinions on that. The president still has a little bit more than a week to issue pardons. These cannot be questioned or appealed. There's absolute authority for him to do so. But Charles Fried, would that be a good idea?
No, it's a very bad idea. It was a very good thing that Gerald Ford did, that he pardoned Richard Nixon, the only Republican president, the only Republican candidate up until McCain that I did not vote for is Richard Nixon. But it was a patriotic act, and I think most of the country now agrees it was a patriotic act, to pardon Richard Nixon so that the Jimmy Carter administration would not be shadowed throughout its four rather grim years by the prosecution of a former president, something we have never seen.
Jonathan Turley?
Well, it might not surprise that we disagree on the Nixon thing. I thought it was a terrible mistake for Ford to do so. But we are in accord as to the use of a pardon here. The pardon power is viewed as plenary and absolute. But there's been a long debate among academics as to the necessity of having some limitations. And the problem with this pardon
I'm sorry, what is this debate? Because
Yeah, I'm explaining it right now. The problem with the idea of these type of blanket pardons, and they've been used in the past. Kennedy used them, for example, to pardon everyone convicted under a Narcotics Act. But this would be for a crime that has not been prosecuted, which is not necessarily unheard of. It would be for a very general range of crimes, because he would have to pardon for all crimes associated with the torture program. That would be a very broad range of crimes, from obstruction to potential perjury to false statements to torture itself. And there would be tremendous uncertainty on the edges of how far that would go. But I think that at the end of the day, we should all agree it would be a terrible abuse. That as president, if you believe that you did something lawful, then you should be able to stand in a federal court and to say it was and to defend it.
Professor Fried?
Well, that's not why I wouldn't want the pardon. The reason I wouldn't want the pardon is because it, in fact, concedes the propriety of the prosecution. And I would not want that. I would want there to be no prosecution because of an act of judgment such as the one I think President-elect Obama indicates he's going to use, that it is not wise to prosecute under these circumstances. Once again, what I do not agree with is the notion that if there is a crime, principle requires that it must be prosecuted. Now, Jonathan says, no, I don't mean that. I mean just war crimes. I mean just crimes by really important people. I mean really crimes by people I don't like pursuing a war that I oppose.
No, that's something I never even suggested. I supported the impeachment of someone I did like. But the point is, if you look at the United Nations Convention Against Torture, it has a wonderful
chime
provision.
Of your clock, Jonathan.
But you know, at the United Nations Convention, they have a wonderful provision that says there's no excuses for torture, and it's an absolute crime. That's not such a bad standard to enforce.
Jonathan Turley of the George Washington University Law School, and also with us, Charles Fried today. He is a professor at Harvard Law School, visiting at Columbia Law School. Thank you, gentlemen, both very much for your time.
Thank you.
Coming up, mandatory calorie counts on the menu in Massachusetts. Does it work? The opinion page is next. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.